At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Granddad Business with Aaron Caliber.
That's my dad.
Hello!
Underpants?
That is my letter.
Shush your mouth, dude. Rate and review this podcast or my daddy will go into a deep depression.
Going down business with Aaron Cliver.
Yeah.
Boom. Welcome to Grown Dad Business. I have no idea if this is recording. I think it is. It is. It is recording. We're driving to the pool. The whole family is in the car. Say hi, everybody.
Hi.
What was that? Luke the Nuke sounded like a 400-pound, 80-year-old man. You did sound kind of like a zombie. The baby is shutting up because we gave her some keys. So if you hear some keys jingling. But hey, welcome to Grown Man Business. Grown Dad Business. What is this called? I don't remember. Hot Biscuits and Dads. That's a movie that I would not recommend to children. Hot Biscuits and Dads. That's the name of my next... Luke, would you shush your mouth? Jeez, he's got a co-host the whole show. This is an intro for this episode today. I had an amazing guest when I was on tour. One of my friends from Los Angeles ended up being the feature opener when I was headlining in Oklahoma City, which is crazy because he is a headliner in his own right. He's hysterical. And basically, you know, he was trying out to be a headliner for these clubs, and I was like, oh crap, because he's a destroyer. But before I introduce the opener, you know that I got to hit you up with my sponsorship friends. Number one, Goods and Evil. You know goodsandevil.com. Check those guys out if you like horror movies or movies at all. Hey, girl. That's the baby. Goodsandevil.com. Also, they have a huge line of vegan t-shirts as well if you're into that. Use the coupon code GROWNUP on goodsandevil.com. Save 10% on any order. That's pretty awesome. Some of my favorite shirts of all time are from Goods and Evil. Also, if you're a comedian, an entertainer, or a musician, check out Ignite Hospitality. Ignite, I-G, Ignite Hospitality. What they do for you is they barter deals with hotels and get you cheap hotels, all for a trade of social media. All you gotta do is give a positive Yelp review, give a shout out on social media, and you get a cheap hotel room for your shows or whatever you're doing in town. It's pretty rad. I just booked, you know, next week I'm staying at the Hilton in downtown Chicago for $40 a night. It's a $300 a night hotel. It's pretty rad. So check out Ignite Hospitality. Tell Adam that AK sent you. So that's pretty awesome. And that's about it. My guest today is Ty Rivera, really funny comedian. You may have seen him on Gabriel Iglesias' Stand-Up Revolution, but we talk about some interesting things. Ty has a very interesting life. He is a gay Mexican from Phoenix, Arizona. So he is Trump's demographic, which is funny. Because he will adamantly talk about how he's a Trump supporter. He's a very interesting person, and I love him for it, for being himself. And he's just so fun to hang out with. Really funny. We talk about his huge family and a couple other things. But please enjoy and check out Ty Rivera. Follow him. Blah, blah, blah. You can see me live if you would like. I'm going to be in Chicago next week doing the show Comedians You Should Know on the 27th, and on the 28th I'll be at the Laugh Factory Chicago, and then I will be headlining at Joker's in Milwaukee the rest of that weekend. Then Then what am I doing? I don't even remember. Then I'm going to Little Rock. I'll be at the Looney Bin in Little Rock the first week of August. And then I'll be at the Houston Improv with my homie, John Witherspoon, Uncle Spoon. So check that out. All right. Enjoy my chat with Ty Rivera.
So, yeah, I have Ty Rivera. We just had an amazing week. We're finishing off an amazing week in Oklahoma City.
Yes,
it's been fun.
It's been very fun. It's just week three for me.
I know.
Being out here. You know, I mean, like, I was Wichita first, Tulsa second, and now Oklahoma City, and then I have Little Rock to go.
Wow, you're doing a month of Looney Bins.
Yeah, and today it just hit me that I'm actually tired.
Wow.
Yeah, until today I felt fine, you know, and no regular, like, comic, you know, depression or any of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just today it finally hit me. I was like, I'm kind of tired.
No, traveling wears on you pretty good.
Yeah.
It does. It does. I had a crazy travel week. Yeah, so this week I've said to Ty, I thought Ty was headlining in Tulsa, and I was like, I contacted the GM at Tulsa, and I was like, oh, you have Ty. And he's like, oh, he's only featuring, and he's featuring for you next week. And I was like, what the shit? 'Cause you're a beast. You're a great comic. People, obviously, I will tell them, go look up Ty Rivera. What's your website?
AmericasFavoriteFag.com.
How is that not the best porno site ever? How did you get that website?
I don't know. I was up late one night in a hotel room, and I remember being like, because I started saying America's Favorite Fag, that I wanted to be America's Favorite Fag, like, way back when, so I was open micing.
Yeah.
And so one night it just hit me in a hotel room. I was like, I should see if that's available.
And it was.
Yeah. And, like, technically my website is tyrivera.com.
Yeah.
But then I have to tell people spell Thai like Thai food, or, you know what I mean?
Right.
So this way, if it's just America's Favorite Fag, then it's a fun way.
Well, we're very different, because I say, like, people don't know how to spell Aaron Cliver, so I say go to growndadbusiness.com.
Well,
a little bit different.
Same thinking, but yeah. Same general thinking.
That is a kind of a funny brand. I can't even pimp your website because I don't even want to say it.
I don't blame you. I know a lot of people can't say it. You know, when I first got my Facebook fan page, I named it Ty Rivera's Big Gay Fan Page.
That's funny.
But then people didn't want to like it, because then it's on their page that they like.
Oh, yeah.
So I hit Facebook up and was able to change it, because they wouldn't let you change it on your own.
Oh.
Yeah, and so I hit Facebook up and said, hey, I'm a business, and I thought this would be funny at first, but it's ended up, you know, not being the most beneficial.
Oh, wow.
Can we change it?
Wow.
And so they allowed me to change it to Ty Rivera Comedy.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That is a funny idea, though, but it is like, you know, it, I guess for some people, you can be like, you know, Aaron Kleiber likes Ty Rivera's Big Gay Fan Page.
Yeah, and then all your friends see that, and then, you know, if you like something from my post. I know, but I have I have so many comedy fans that are the opposite of what people would expect me to have.
Yeah.
Soccer moms, a lot of straight.
Sure.
Very secure in their sexuality, straight men, you know.
Do you think that people sometimes like that are fans of yours as like a secret novelty? Like their way in, or their like look in, like, you know, they're like, I know, I really like this comedian, and I kind of, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I also make everything really accessible for them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, a lot of them don't have a lot of exposure to the gay community or gay life.
Yeah.
And so, like, because I have a sense of humor about everything. And then also, like, on private message, I'll get a lot of people asking me questions that are just legit questions.
Yeah.
Like, trying to figure stuff out. Like, when Caitlyn Jenner was a big deal.
Yeah.
This lady hit me up and was like, look, I know you posted on your page that you think she's a hero, and I just can't see it that way.
Yeah.
So can you explain to me why it is you think she's a hero? And so I explained it to her, and then she was like, okay, I totally see how you see that. I still personally don't, but I appreciate you explaining it to me, because at least I can see how you would.
Yeah. Do you think Caitlyn Jenner is a hero?
I thought she was. I mean, I still kind of think she is, because when someone with that visibility in that age range comes out, you know, especially as trans, that's really makes it a lot more relatable to the older people that feel like that didn't really happen in their generation, even though it clearly was happening then.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like, so I think like her opening the eyes to people that, you know, are maybe in her same age range.
Oh, okay.
Is what?
Yeah, the visibility thing makes sense. I mean, that's the only one thing I know I told people. I'm like, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Like, I think that whole family's garbage, but like, I think it's good for her.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't watch the Kardashians. I've seen a couple episodes. I don't really watch, but I like them a lot just because I'm never against people that know how to make money.
That's a good point. I can't argue that.
That's my only thing with them. You know, they're really good at branding and marketing. And, you know, as we all know, as comics, that's something that's not the easiest thing in the world. You know, it's not easy to make people pay attention to you when you have a talent.
Right.
So the fact that none of these people technically have a talent, which isn't an insult, but none of them sing, they don't dance, they're not, they're not known for a talent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like to be able to make yourself famous off of that, especially to that level.
Right.
Is what I respect about them.
Now, I think the last time I saw you do stand up, I think I saw you at the Comedy Store real quick, but I saw you about 3 or 4 years ago and you did a hilarious joke about scaring men hiding in the bushes, which was really funny. And you got to do that last night and I laughed wholeheartedly. But like now it seems like I never remembered you from 3 or 4 years ago being like the say whatever you want kind of comic.
Yeah.
You know, now it's just like you say whatever you're feeling and it's damn hysterical.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, and people love it. People are like, you know, whether you agree with it or not, people are like, oh, it, I think I enjoy it because it's like you're expressing yourself.
Yeah, and that's what the point is. It's not like, you know, because I know that a lot of people don't agree with the things I say, and I'm fine with that. I don't feel like it's my job as a comic to make you see things the way I do. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything. Like, the main point is to make people laugh.
Yeah.
And then the fact that I use my opinions in that is just, like, me having fun.
Yeah,
you
that's
know?
Stand-up. I mean, we aren't supposed to be selling some idea. It's just a, hey, come along for a ride in our psyche.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly the way I see it. Too many people don't get that as far as stand-ups go. Like, they really want to push their opinion on people, and then they wonder why people don't like them. And it's like, well, because you're trying to force them to think your way instead of just saying, this is the way I think.
Yeah.
You're welcome to think however you want.
Yeah, when comics get preachy, it's just like, relax. Like,
the worst.
Yeah, just be funny. And, you know, I think if you're funny's your number one goal, you can still kind of touch people with your words.
Yeah.
I mean, just if they connect with you personally. Well, when did that start for you? I mean, you kind of always said what you wanted, but it seemed like, unless I saw you do a road gig that was, you know, I don't know. Did you feel like you found that voice a little bit more in the last couple years?
Yeah, I guess so. Because when I first, when you first saw me, that's when I was with Joe Coy.
Right.
And, you know, I worked with him for a year and a half and he gave me a lot of freedom, never put any limitations on me. So I was able to grow. But at that time, I didn't have a lot of resistance. You know, it was more, well, you know, sometimes you do a redneck room and some people would be a little resistant or whatever, but you didn't have like the way Facebook has become.
Right.
Where people think they should tell you what you should think.
Ugh, I know.
So once the real political correctness started really kicking in and I started getting pushback on stuff that to me was just me expressing a different way of looking at something. Once I started getting pushback on that, then I started like pushing back and being like, no, this is what I'm going to say.
Right.
So then I was like, you know, okay, well, let me just make it clear for everybody during my set that I don't care what you think. You know, like, just laugh and enjoy it or don't go smoke a cigarette. Like, that's one thing I make the announcement of sometimes when I'm headlining, because when I'm featuring, it's not my place to do it. But I will tell people, like, you know, when I'm headlining that, like, you know, if at any point you truly get offended, feel free to get up and leave. You've had your two drinks.
Yeah.
The club is fine. You know what I mean? You paid for your ticket. You got a full show at this point because you saw the opener and the feature. You love them. So if you don't like me, it's time to go.
Yeah, I mean, that's, and I have always, I've said to you that, like, I appreciate that because I don't have the balls to do that. I try to be a nice person. I like to be liked. And that's a fearless thing. It is. It's, I think it's great. I look up to that.
Thank you. I also just feel like, you know, and I don't, like, I have so many people in real life that really like me that I don't really feel like strangers are that important.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's getting therapeutic for me. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, like, you know, I posted it on Facebook before, like, my parents are ridiculously in love with me.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I have sisters and they're like, you know, and my nephews and nieces. And so because I have that, I feel like as long as they're okay with me,
yeah,
then everything else. And if one of them were to choose not to be, that's their business too. Yeah. Like I still.
That's funny. That's true. No, that's true. Let me get into that. Like, so you grew up both parents.
Yes.
And your parents are still together and in love.
It's been over 40 years. I don't know if in love.
Are they in separate beds yet?
No, they sleep in the same bed. You know, my parents, I've seen everything with them.
Yeah.
You know, I remember that, like, when I talk about it on stage, like, there were times when I wondered how one of them didn't kill the other.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, like, that's really the way it was when I was younger. You know, there were different points. But now I think they've gotten to a point where maybe they're not in love, but they're definitely best friends.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? So
yeah,
it's
yeah.
not
they
like
love
that.
Each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And as they get older, it's kind of cute to see that they get more and more affectionate towards each other. Like when I was growing up, I never saw them hold hands.
Right.
And now, like, they hold hands sometimes, or my dad, like, you know, ribs my mom a little bit, you know, like, but they've always been fun. Like, they're the whole time, like, even when they didn't really like each other, they were always, like, you know, funny and silly.
Yeah. And so you grew up in this big Mexican family in Arizona.
Not too big. I have three sisters and then me.
Well, four kids is still pretty big.
Is that? Yeah,
that's what I mean.
Well, see, here's...
Maybe not to Mexicans.
That's what I was just about to say.
I don't want to get all racist and say something to trigger somebody.
Well, then you're interviewing the wrong person. Like, no, my mom is from a family of 11.
Yeah.
And my dad is 13.
Wow.
Yeah, so when you say
so
big,
well.
And I think of my, you know, us being four.
So when you have a cookout or a family reunion, it's huge.
We don't go.
You just don't even go?
No, we don't even go. Like, that's one thing I like about my parents. They taught me from an early age, like, we kind of broke off from everybody else. Like, they have decent relationships with their families, but we just don't pay attention to them.
Now, is all of those people in your family, they all in Arizona?
No, my dads are everywhere. Like, you know, Washington, California, like spread out over different states. And then also my dad was the baby of 13 brothers and sisters.
Oh, okay.
Or 12 brothers and sisters.
Right.
And he's now 75.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of his brothers and sisters have already passed away.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And in your mom's family, they all around that area too?
Yeah, my mom's family, I actually have a relationship with a few of them, not a lot, but a few of them. Like, and they come out to see me and they're really great, but, and they don't mind me saying this, it's not like a put down or anything, but they're ghetto.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're super ghetto. Like, we weren't raised ghetto.
Yeah.
But they're a whole different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, so you said your parents were like silly and fun?
Yeah.
Is that where you kind of get a sense of humor from?
Yeah, and I also get the I don't care type stuff from my mom.
Oh, really?
My mom says whatever she wants all the time. It's the best. And it's been like that. Like, the best thing about my mom is, like, to the outside world, she looks really quiet and respectful.
That's my mom.
Yeah, and then she, you know, rolls up the window to the car or closes the door on the house and lets it go. And
my mom will smile and be like, oh, is that right? And then, like, turn her head to me like, I will
Exactly.
Like, and just like that piece of shit, that she's a whore. Like,
just, yeah.
My mom gets so mad hearing me say that. She's like, I don't do. Yes, you do.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. That's what they do. Like, my mom's the same way. She's like, you make it sound like, and like, what, the truth?
Yeah.
That's what I make it sound like is the truth.
You sound like I'm a crazy person. Yeah, you do go nuts. You.
Yeah, I remember because I grew up in Casa Grande, Arizona. My mom was raised in Phoenix, and so was my dad.
Yeah.
You know, so we moved to Casa Grande, which is a smaller town, and because my dad got work there, and like, you know, it was a good life there. But my mom wasn't used to small town thinking,
right?
And so I remember she would like, you know, listen to the other moms talk sometimes and whatever. She'd be in the car, somebody would be standing next to the window talking to her. She'd roll up the window as soon as they were done and look over at me and go, small town, small brain.
I think that's the third catchphrase you've told me that your mom has said.
She's
like,
great.
She has little like sayings.
Yeah.
Do you think, so do you kind of get that? You do get that from her, you think?
Just
kind of like that fearlessness of just speaking your mind?
Yeah, for sure.
Wow.
And it, like, you know, she always tells me like, you know, don't worry about people.
Yeah.
You know, like if... You know, people used to bug me when I was younger. She would just be like, don't worry about them. Ignore them. Pretend like they're not
there. And it sounds like that your mom, I'm just guessing, correct me if I'm wrong. It sounds like that your mom was probably a really great supporter when you came out as gay.
Well, they didn't know how to take it at first. Like, my mom thought it was a phase.
Okay.
And so she told me, literally when I told her I was gay, she told me, no, you're not.
No, you're not.
Yeah, and it was it got very uncomfortable because it did turn into a yes, I am, no, you're not situation, like back and forth.
I don't know many people that go back.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, I'm going to go.
Yeah, that was a rough phase I went through.
I suck some dick, but I'm done with that.
Yeah, it got boring.
Oh, 97 was crazy. Like, what?
Yeah, but, you know, so at first she thought it was a phase, and then my dad, you know, being a... Mexican American first generation really wasn't down with it, you know what I mean?
Like, right.
And then after a while, you know, they just accepted it.
Yeah, is it like, I know in different, you know, cultures and different people, like, it's a little bit different. I know Black culture, it's a rough thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a very secret thing. Yeah, how are Mexicans with that?
It used to be that way. Now it's gotten a lot more open.
Yeah,
but it used to be similar. And then, like, you know, I met a fair amount of Mexicans from Mexico that, like, I'm not generalizing and saying everybody sees
sure.
it this
yeah,
way,
I'm,
but I've,
yeah, I'm not either.
I've met a fair amount of Mexicans from Mexico that fuck around with guys,
yeah,
but they're married to women. And the way they see it is boys are for fun and women are for actually being married to a relationship.
Okay.
I'd imagine that's changing too now since everybody gets to be out, you know, but
yeah, right.
Like back when I was younger, I remember that being a big thing.
That's kind of how it's been since the Greeks and the Romans.
Yeah.
I mean, like that's what it was.
Same thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Wow. Wow. So your family, what about your sisters? Now, were your sisters, did you say they were older?
Two older, one younger.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So how were they growing up? Were they also fun?
My sister Margie is probably the funniest person I know.
That is great to hear.
Yeah, she's really funny.
She older or younger?
Older.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's older than I am, but she's just really quick and funny. And but, you know, she has no interest in stand-up or anything like that, so she just...
Don't you hate that when people are like that, where they're like so funny, and they're like, oh, I couldn't get it.
I love it. I think they're the best kind, though, because they don't want to exploit it. You know what I mean? Like, so to me, it's almost better. It's like...
Yeah, it's like this little secret. They're, like, so funny at parties or around a dinner table, and then you're just like, no, I couldn't get it. Like, at a wedding or something. I couldn't.
Yeah.
Like, what is what?
And none of us at home have any kind of politically correct filter.
Really?
So yeah, everybody in my family just says whatever they want. You know, when we're around each other, we say absolutely anything.
Kind of all come from your mom?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and my dad's never discouraged it either. Like, my dad's never been like, you know, oh, you shouldn't say that. There's nobody in my family that says don't say that.
Is your dad the kind of guy where like you and your sisters and your mom, is he the kind of dad that walks around like rolling his eyes like, you guys are nuts? Like, I just picture him going, oi.
Oh, yeah. There's
like
there's a
what
lot
do
of
I
that.
Have here?
Yeah, there's a lot of that, but then there's also a lot of him encouraging us. Like, he's also really funny, you know, yeah. like, but more like dry and also dad humor, you know, like,
yeah.
One time I was talking to him about my younger sister because she was like 20 something. And I was like, from like, because her and my mom had been not getting along well at all. And I was like, I don't know what it is, but it's something about mom from like 25 to like 27, you just hate her. And then I was like, that's what I've noticed.
What, like all your siblings?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And then my dad was like, yeah, it happens again when you're about 60.
So, what do you think it is that, like, around that age, do you think it's because you're getting out of, like, that young, you know, like, early 20s and you're moving into adulthood and your mom's kind of annoying? Is that what it was? Trying to figure out why it would be, like, your mid-20s.
Yeah, I don't think, because I don't think she starts to respect us as adults. Mm. You know, and that's the point where it really hits you, like, oh, she's not taking me seriously.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, everything's, like, to her, like, you know, we're her kids.
Yeah, right.
And then, so, you have that period where you hate her and you get into it with her a lot, and then, you know, you both grow.
It wasn't like that stage with your sisters that she was like, you know, go make me grandbabies kind of thing?
No, my mom was never big on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, she discouraged, because my mom's a housewife.
Yeah.
And she discouraged my sisters from that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they ended up, like, you know, having kids and stuff. But, like, when they were young, I remember she would tell them specifically, do not end up like me.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't be a housewife. Wow. Don't, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So your sisters do fine.
Yeah.
They're great.
Yeah, they're great. But my youngest sister is probably the most... like, by the book, good one out of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, as far as, like, you know, the life she lives and, you know, the schooling she's had and stuff like that.
What does she do?
She was IT for, like, the library systems in Phoenix. Yeah. And then she moved on to something else. But it's always, like, you know, administrative, and she makes good money, and she has, you know. And she was technically supposed to be a failure. I mean, like, you know, statistically.
Well, that probably made her an overachiever because she was the little one. That happens.
And statistically, you know, because she got pregnant. I think she was 14 when she got pregnant.
Really?
Yeah.
How did your family deal with that? That's young.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was a problem. It was a thing.
And
it
what year was that, too? I mean.
I don't even remember. I think, you know.
But that's a big thing to deal with.
98, 97.
Yeah.
You know, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. But then it's really neat to hear that she did well.
Yeah. Well, she turned it around. And so, you know, then when she was like 20 something, she ended up having another kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, by that point. She was already on a pretty good path, and, you know, so it was just, like, at that point, it was just her having a baby.
Did your family see that as, like, a big screw-up, or did they kind of just embrace what they were dealt? Like, just, like, we got to deal with this.
Yeah, we're always just a we got to deal with this family. Yeah. That's why I never feel like the world's caving in on me.
Right.
Because, like, my family has always just been like, yeah, well, we'll figure it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree. I can relate to that, too. I mean, you know, I say almost every episode, like, I, you know, went through abuse for almost a decade, and, you know, we grew up poor in the projects. Like, it's so when things are going wrong, you're just like, whatever, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, you make it work.
Yeah. And there will be, you know, occasional yelling and screaming and having to, like, you know, let off steam that way. But, like, as far as, like, everybody falling into this slump and doom, it's that doesn't happen in my family. It's like, yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, that's true. Were your sisters kind of supportive when you came out? Were you close to them?
My oldest sister had a gay friend in high school.
Yeah.
So she was a little too excited about it. It was almost disappointing. Like, you know, everybody else is giving resistance and she's just like, oh yeah, I don't care. You know
what
I
mean? Yeah. And you're like, no.
Yeah, you're supposed to be mad. I want some emotion. She's just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I remember she always used to say this dumb little phrase that everybody used to say when I was growing up, and it was, don't make me none.
Don't make me none?
Yeah, don't make me none. Like, it doesn't matter to me.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like, you know, when I told her I was gay, she's like, don't make me none. Just like, all right. And then my older, my middle sister, Aleki, she was very, she was like, so you're a faggot? And then that's the tone that it took.
Wow.
Yeah, and then, she has my nephews and nieces. And so I was like, you know, well, you know, I just wanted to make sure you knew and stuff like that. And then she was like, I was like, I just wanted to make sure that, you know, you weren't worried about like me being around the kids or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, and then
yeah, right.
She was like, she's like, yeah, I don't hang out with faggots, but that's their business if they want to. So
her kids?
Yeah.
What?
And they were babies. You know what I mean? They were ridiculous. little at the time. Yeah. And so like that kind of made me laugh in my head when she said that. Even at the time, you know, in my head, I was just kind of like, that's a funny way to put it.
Because you, when you came out, I think you said you were 17?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so was it like to just everybody at the same time?
Yeah. Was it like my family.
Decision?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was really rough for me. You know, like deciding to, because I didn't know how they were going to react. And, you know, like things are so much different now. Then, like, you know, it wasn't uncommon for people to be put out of their houses or, you know, like that kind of stuff. And so I didn't know how I was going to go down. So there were, you know, like a couple of days where I just like, you know, I couldn't sit comfortably. I just had it on my mind. Right. I couldn't relax. Everything was just like really at that point miserable. Sure.
And two, you told me too that you came out at 17, but you dropped out of high school in ninth grade.
Yeah. Well, right after ninth grade, technically.
So what happened where you dropped out of high school?
You know, I was just, I hate waking up early.
I mean, there's gotta be way more to it than that.
There really wasn't a lot outside of that. You know what I mean? Like, when I was in ninth grade, I remember that my school didn't start until third hour.
Okay.
Because I just wouldn't wake up.
Yeah.
And so then I went to an alternative school that started at noon.
Yeah.
And so then that was the way I got through ninth grade. And then, half of ninth grade. Then second semester, I went back to regular high school. And it was whatever, but like I still wasn't able to wake up early.
Yeah.
And so we moved to Phoenix.
Yeah.
And I was just really over school at that point.
were you working like right away?
No.
You just at home?
Yeah. Me and my older sister Aleki played a lot of board games.
You gotta be kidding me.
I swear to God, we just sat on the couch, played board games. My mom's only rule, we were allowed to drop out if we wanted to. Her only rule was we had to get a GED as soon as we were eligible for it.
Yeah.
So like
and you did.
Yeah, I got my GED as soon
I mean, it's just some I think some of it probably might sound foreign to some people. Like, what?
Yeah.
Like that's a wild way to do things.
Yeah. But my mom just like always reminded us on that too. She was like, well, I have smart kids, so I know if you guys decide you're not going to go to school, you'll figure something out.
Wow, that's that takes a lot of balls.
Yeah, maybe she used to tell us maybe you'll go back later or maybe you'll find something else or, you know.
And I wonder, like, it's interesting because this is a positive thing towards Mexicans, but I think they're hard workers and very resourceful.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be true?
Yeah. No, that I agree with.
I think different types of people are different types of, have different attributes, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's just kind of a neat thing that it's like, yeah, your whole family, you made it happen.
Yeah. And my dad, you know, he, I believe, dropped out too. I think everybody in my family, with the exception of one of my oldest sister, I think all of us are GED people.
So your oldest sister is the only one that graduated high school?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
But everyone's doing fine.
Yeah.
It's funny now that, like, I feel like that then, you know, because we both graduated high school more than a decade ago. And it's like now that, like, yeah, high school, you could get away with that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think you can as much like that. Now, it's like people are now, the conversation is you can get away without college now.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. You absolutely can. I mean, so many people do. And so many people should, you know, so we're not paying for college.
Yeah, I think college is a scam, but that's just me personally.
It's just, I think it's a huge pyramid scheme. Like, mm-hmm. it's insane.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it makes no sense to me because you're asking kids at 17 and 18
yeah.
to decide what they're going to do for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, and to give you $50,000 to $100,000.
Yeah, and then you have these people that are living these miserable lives because yep. they decided at 17 that they wanted to be an engineer.
Right, and now they work at Best Buy.
Yeah.
I know. That's terrible.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, you look at all the comics. Like, now there's a lot of comics that have unused degrees.
Oh, I feel like I just told somebody I think there should be a podcast about that. By the way, trademark, if anybody does that. But I think there should be a comedian podcast called Degrees We Don't Use.
Yeah.
Yeah. I might start that. I'll produce it. But really, like, I have 2 degrees. Like, that I paid $90,000 for. And, like, my friend, I just found out, my friend Abby Rosenquist, she's a comedian from Austin. She has an engineering degree.
Yeah.
Like, super smart.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, what? Like... And then you find out, you see comedians and they're like, oh yeah, I have like a nuclear science degree.
Yeah, well, that's the
like,
thing.
What the shit?
But it also falls under that just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what the thing is with that, in my opinion. It's like, yeah, these people are smart enough to do that, but that's not really what they want to yeah. do. You know, just because you're smart enough to do it doesn't mean.
I'm not fully on the spectrum of like, I regret every, you know, all my college. I don't. I went to a Christian liberal arts college, mm-hmm. Which was a great mix. Made me the man I am. I went through counseling because in order to do counseling, you have to go through counseling,
mm-hmm.
which is good advice because not everyone does that. A lot of people just go into counseling or ministry because they think it'll heal themselves and it does not. And those are the ones that molest children.
yeah.
But that it is one of the best personal experiences I had, made me the man I am, made me, you know, thirst for knowledge, things like that. But I still think like, you know, from what I do now, it's like, I wish I would have got like a communications or marketing or business degree, like an MBA or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would make sense to know that now. And I actually taught myself marketing and advertising to change careers early on in my life. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's smart. I mean, like, you know, like, well, that's the thing. That's the other thing is like with so much access to information on the internet
yeah.
now, it's like you don't really have to, like, you know, yeah, I guess it's good, but. At the same time, we can learn anything we want to learn.
Yeah, you're right. So before we get out of here, I gotta know, like, when did you start stand up?
I started stand up when I was 2003.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was 27.
You started at 27.
Yeah.
What did you do from high school to 27? You had to have some goofy jobs.
Well, when I was young, I did all the regular stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like all the, like, I worked at McDonald's, I worked at Burger King, I worked right. at Jack in the Box.
You did do the fast food gamut, didn't you?
Yeah, I really did. I dug trenches for the cable company for a short while.
I'm just picturing young gay Ty working Jack in the Box and digging trenches.
Oh, I hated all of it, you know? And then, I discovered that gay men really loved me and to pay for things for me. So I lived that life for several years.
Did you really?
Yeah, it was great.
Was it an older gay guy thing? Like,
I never had a sugar daddy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like I just, you know, like I don't remember who I was talking to this about before. Maybe it was at a storytelling show or something like that. But like when I first came out, like when I was younger, like I started noticing, like, you know, there was a certain kind of guy that liked me and they usually had money.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people would ask me to go out on dates and then I'd be like, you know, just legit like them or think that they yeah. were interesting. And so I'd say, yeah. And then, like, you know, they'd come pick me up in a really nice car and then, like, you know, take me to really nice places. And I started noticing this trend or whatever. Mm-hmm. So then I just got like, you know, well, yeah, I can probably make money off of this. So that's what I started doing.
And then, so you decided to do comedy, though.
Yeah. Oh, and then also, and then, okay, so I got tired of that life when I was like 25, I think. I got tired of that. And then I went to work for a while in an office, and I was doing data entry, mm-hmm. You know, but I was really like quick at it. Like originally they had like this huge amount of forms. Mm-hmm. And it, like, you know, all of it had to be input into the system. And they had like 4 different people doing this because it was so boring that, you know, everybody would get tired of it. And so they, you know, had them on different jobs and they would do that every once in a while. But the stuff wasn't getting in the way they needed it to. And I was able to just put in earbuds and listen to music and just bang it out. You know what I mean? And so they decided that I was, you know, worth a decent amount of money because I was just able to do the job that they had 4 other people on before, and now they could just have me. So that's what I did for a couple of years. And even when I moved to LA, they let me do it telecommute.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that's how I was able to sustain myself when I first moved to LA.
That's the best. When people move to LA, they can keep their job and do it like via online.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the best.
Yeah, but it was like the thing was, I was making decent money for living in Phoenix.
Right.
Then once I moved to LA,
it was like shit money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was living in my Jeep Grand Cherokee before long.
Yeah. Though I had a friend who was working for, you know, like a construction company doing work, you know, and not physical work.
Yeah.
You know, but like office, specializing in construction stuff, and was like pretty wealthy.
Uh-huh.
You know, made pretty good money in Pittsburgh, and then moved to LA, and then like they were poor.
Yeah.
And that's what it is.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, when people ask me, I've told you, like, people are like, oh, you moved to LA. Like, I do well living in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
If I move to LA, we are in a 2-bedroom shithole.
Yeah.
With my wife and 3 kids. That's not happening.
I live in a studio.
Yeah.
Like, it's a nice studio. It's big.
Yeah.
But it's a studio.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, but for what I pay there in Phoenix, I could definitely have, like, a 2- or 3-bedroom house.
Yeah,
and, you know,
absolutely.
Like, be a lot more comfortable in if I were back in Arizona. But, you know, like, I have to be in L.A. to get more credits and stuff like that. That's why I stay.
Yep. That's why I fly out there all the time.
Yeah, and I lived in Vegas for a while when I was younger, and that was also same, like, really good, like, cost of living and stuff like that.
It was then, not now.
Yeah, it's still not terrible.
No?
No, it's not terrible at all in Vegas.
I just know my friend from college moved out there for work.
Mm-hmm.
They got work, but the housing market crashed so hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they bought a $400,000 house and could only sell it for like $220,000.
Yeah.
Which is bad. Like the housing.
Terrible.
Because apparently they built tons of houses out there that they didn't need.
Yeah.
So there's just vacant houses sitting everywhere.
Yeah. Well,
whole neighborhoods.
I was dating a guy in Vegas like 5 years ago or something like that. And I was spending a lot of time at his place. And he had that, or that there was a, you know, the news was doing one of their nightly exposés, and it was Vegas underwater.
Yeah.
And it was just all about that and like the crash.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was nightly that they'd be talking about a new.
Yeah. It was bad. So you started comedy in Phoenix.
Just barely.
Barely.
Yeah. Like, you know, when you're first, well, I don't know if it was the same for you, but a lot of people I've talked to, like when you first start doing comedy, you're able to get up maybe once a week or twice a week, you know, like that's the way it was for me. There wasn't a lot of stuff to do in Phoenix. Now Phoenix has a great scene.
Yeah, there's a lot of clubs.
Yeah, but like at that time, 10 p.m. Prov was the only club.
Right.
And they had like a open mic, but the only way you could do it was if you took this comedy class.
Right.
And I didn't want to take a comedy class. And so I wasn't in at the 10 p.m. Prov. So there was this show I used to do at a place called The Sets that was called, I think it was The Valley's Funniest or something like that, which was a contest, which was a bringer, which I didn't know what a bringer was. I just thought, oh, cool, you invite your friends. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, so it was like that. And so And then there weren't that many bar shows at all either. And then I, like, for a minute, because I just really wanted to grow, but I had terrible stage fright. I would drive to Tucson every Tuesday to do 3 minutes. So it's like 3 hour round trip driving to do 3 minutes of stage
What
time.
Was the decision that you finally made? You were like, I'm going to do stand up.
Well, just when I started doing Tucson, like now there's cool comics in Tucson. A lot of them are really great with me, but they were not nice to me. Because like, even though I had bad stage fright and stuff like that, I was really good at writing and like, you know, I guess my nervousness made the audience, like me more.
Right. Like pull for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I would get these really big reactions. Like I remember one of the first times I went to Tucson, literally people pounding on the tables during my jokes. Like it was just like, so, you know, like they just loved me.
Yeah.
And so then that made the Tucson comics not be nice to me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I came up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And I, yeah.
They were not nice to me at all.
The people that were doing it 2-3 years, and then I catch up to them and then pass them, they don't like you.
Yeah. And so that's what they did. And they would make it hard for me. Like, you know, there's never really traffic between Phoenix and Tucson. It's usually like a clear shot, you know?
Just 85, 90 miles an hour.
Yeah, you just go. And you know, like, so one time I'm on my way out there. This is kind of why I left when I was like, okay, I'm done with this. I'm on my way to Tucson from Phoenix. And for some reason, there's an accident or something. I just remember that I ended up being like 10 minutes late from the sign up.
Yeah.
And everybody knew I was coming from Phoenix every week. And so I get there. And some of the comics are standing, like, you know, in front of the list. And then I was like, I know that the list closed like 10 minutes ago. I was like, is there any way I can sign up? And they were like, sorry. And I was like, yeah, you can't let me sign up. And they were like, sorry about that. And I was like, okay. And so then, you know, I was trying to be nice, so I stuck around and watched the open mic, you know, and plus I had just driven an hour and a half and the stress of the traffic and so longer than an hour and a half, you know.
Wow.
So I just, like, I sat and watched the show, and then I just thought, like, you know, I need to get out of Arizona if I want to grow.
So where did you go?
I moved to LA, like, within a month or something.
Really?
Yeah, like.
So how long were you doing stand-up before you moved to LA?
Like 4 months.
Get out of
here. Yeah.
So then you were just, how long you've been in LA?
13 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And you're doing it, man.
Yeah.
You're starting to headline all around the country. And, you know, like I said, when I saw you, you're touring with Joe Coy. And you can, I don't know if people can see you on Gabriel Iglesias' Stand Up Revolution.
Yeah, they can search that on, if they just search Ty Rivera Stand Up Revolution, it'll come up.
Because I know you do a great story on stage about how PC people got later on, and they re-aired your Stand Up Revolution special, and now all of a sudden people don't like what you're saying. And,
yeah.
So, you know, people can go watch that and see what you think, and you'll get a pretty good taste of Ty. Is that a thing?
That's, yeah, taste of Thai.
Is that, could be a t-shirt of yours? Take a taste of Thai.
We'll work on it. We'll see. We'll see if I can do a pitch for it. I'm not good at the merch pitch.
Well, thanks, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I really did enjoy hanging out with you this weekend.
Oh, yeah. It's been great. We still have tonight. And then.
I know. And then you go to Little Rock.
Yeah, off to Little Rock.
I'm going home. Well, thanks very much, brother. And everyone can see Ty at tyrivera.com or
americasfavoritefag.com.
Oh, my gosh. All right. I tell everybody, be kind, be funny, Ty.
Thank you.
Epicast. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.